Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
And so right. Love has come and the numbers go. That's what the people say.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to find out how a home-cooked meal has many benefits, including healthier ingredients and fewer processed foods. But there's another reason to avoid eating out all the time. Preparing meals at home can reduce your exposure to harmful PFAS chemicals that are commonly found in takeout food and fast food packaging, according to research from the Silent Spring Institute published in Environmental Health Perspectives. So, we're going to talk about that, but a lot more on health and healing. Also today, I'm going to play an 11-second clip. It's very short, but very meaningful, at least for those of us who care about human rights and racism and bigotry and absolute, unbridled, megalomaniac, psychopathic power. I'll be doing a commentary on that topic today. Then I'm going to talk about whether or not excess use of the internet or any form of artificial intelligence devices, is that addictive? Is it the same type of addiction? And does it impact our brain in the same way as, let's say, opiates? So we'll discuss that. We have a lot to share, but we always begin with the latest in health and healing. And by the way, I hope so many of the people who used to listen to me on BAI for 45 years, every day at noon. Every time, 1,000 times, I would say, please write down these numbers. You never know when you're going to need them. And of course, they didn't. And now they're flooding my station every single day on the Progressive Radio Network. Now, how can I hear Gary's show? So I'll give you those numbers again. To listen live, Monday to Friday, noon to 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, Tuesday evening to the Progressive Commentary Hour, you'll call this number, 605-562-7900. Again, 605-562-7900. But you can't listen live, so you want to listen later at your convenience. That's fine. Here's our archive number, 701-719-9976. Again, 701-719-9976. And so in any case, we have a lot to share today. I don't know if I'll have time to share Ken Robinson's How to Escape Education's Death Valley. I've been a teacher for 42 years. So having taught thousands of people, I'm very familiar with what's wrong with our educational system. And I wouldn't blame the teachers. I would blame the parents. And no one's blaming the parents. Why? Because it's not politically correct? Well, I think it's time that we understood where is all this acting out coming from kids going to school. It starts at home. If time permits, I'll deal with that as well. But we began with the latest on health and healing. And from this particular study, a lot of people eat out. In fact, more and more people are eating out, and that's not necessarily a good thing, unless you have a very healthy restaurant with organic food and ideally locally grown food. But that's not the case. It's fast food restaurants, highly processed food, denaturing foods, and hypocritically, for some people within the environmental movement, In fact, most of the leaders of the environmental movement and their organizations, they say do one thing and they themselves do another. I believe that everyone, before you donate to any environmental organization, and yesterday I gave you the three types of environmental, I made it easy. This didn't exist. We created this. We gave you the best of the best, those that really are exemplary, including the people associated with them and what they do and how they really make a difference. Then we gave you those that could make a difference but don't because of who gives them the money. So they make great statements. They send out great brochures. You'd think they're saving the planet. They're not. But they're not pernicious either. Then you have those who are simply fronts, astroturf groups, and people in climate denial or taking money and doing absolutely nothing. Al Gore is one of them. So anyhow, so what we have to do is we have to ask people, do you promote veganism? And if so, let me see where you promote it. And are you a vegan? And if not, why not? I believe it's just time we stop supporting anyone who lives such a contradictory life. And you'll see that very often in all these movements. For example, Greta Thunberg is the single most visible person on the planet today concerning the environment. I support that 100%. I wish there were 1,000 Gretas out there. Indeed, there probably are, but they don't have a whole machine around them to exploit her to their advantage economically. And we'll get into that on an upcoming program because I'm getting more about how much money will be made by these foundations and the corporations they're associated with when they go to carbon tax write-offs and other types of greening the economy by first commodifying the economy. And they're very much into that. So we're going to deal with all these things on an upcoming program. In any case, what I want is I want us to be aware. Let's start greening our own diet. And the best way of greening a diet is start with simple things. One day a week, let's make it easy. One day a week, we eat at home instead of out in a restaurant. Go to the local farmers market to support locally grown produce. Now, at the farmers market, you have stuff that's healthy and unhealthy, stuff that is consciously grown and just regular commercial, heavily pesticide-sprayed foods. So you will find that the minority of the stalls are organic. You might have 2 or 3, or you might have 10 or 20 of the regular. Go to those that support. And now you have gourmet boutique thing stalls that have, I just saw one in New York 3 weeks ago when I went to the farmer's market over by Columbus Circle. No, it wasn't Columbus Circle. It was the Museum of Natural History on Columbus Avenue. And there was one stall that had 40 different types of microgreens, beautifully presented, healthy, fresh, a little on the expensive side, but that's all right. I'm willing to pay a little extra to be a lot more healthy because I know the cost of being sick. So that's what you can do. And then make meals. There are a lot of good cookbooks out there, but go up online and starting Monday, Travis, in our office in New York, Travis is going to be sharing a recipe of the day every single day of the year. These are vegan, they're gourmet, easy to do, beautifully presented. All the ingredients are laid out and how to prepare the meal. So that starts on Monday. And then, but if you can find your own recipes that are vegan, good. But then take another step. Get the film, a good film, on gas, the hydrofracking industry, and the hydrofracking gas that comes from that, and what it does to a community, how it pollutes the water, how it destroys the air, how it takes water out of the ground that we need, and become familiar. Because now you're eating consciously. Now look at the environment from a conscious point of view. That's just one idea. Look at all the articles and the videos on the dangers of nuclear power. It's not green, it's not inexpensive, and it's not safe. And so you become educated, doing two things simultaneously. Look at all the, there must be 30 good films, ones that I would definitely support, conscientious directors, producers, writers, and narrators, about why we have to go from from knives to forks, meaning eating vegetables and plants and legumes and nuts and seeds instead of just eating a steak and potatoes. So again, that the more aware you are, and you're going to be aware because you're now focusing upon intentional awareness. Now, a term I made up 3 years ago was called intentional neglect, meaning if we don't want to know the truth of something, we intentionally do not open our mind to anything coming from that perspective. So we keep our biases intact, which keeps our perception intact, which keeps our reality intact, because your reality is nothing more than an extension of your perception, because perception creates reality. But what if what you believe, three square meals a day with meat and potatoes, is wrong? So this way, by intentionally seeking out new knowledge, it can replace misinformation within our existing frame of knowledge. So these are the things we can do and should do. So if Greta takes all those millions of young people who are getting out on Fridays, but then a certain percentage of them will actually begin to do good things and set an example, they in turn will take that information back into their homes and then put some family pressure upon, hey, mom, dad, I didn't know that, you know, where my hamburger came from or the chicken wings came from. I didn't know any of that. Now I do. Let's watch this film together. So what we're going to do starting next week, and you can go to prn.fm to be a part of this, free of charge. This is our way of sharing gifts with the public. We're going to post award-winning documentaries, not just mine, but other people's, because I believe in the we, and on how to connect with the environment, how to change your life, change your health also, so you're changing the environment, lowering the carbon footprint, becoming more aware, becoming healthier, motivating older people, mainly parents and grandparents, to make some changes also, and then spreading that throughout your school system. And spreading good news of what you can do to help save the planet turns the energy from being fatalistic, apocalyptic, to one of hope and getting people doing something. And people always feel better when they do something. And that's the part of Greta's message I would have tempered and written differently for the ones who were writing it. Young people are very susceptible. Do they need to be awakened? Yes. Do they need to be aware of how serious it is? Absolutely. But can you say it in such a way that does not create a panic in them? Because what if a kid was so impressionable, they thought the world's going to end, and I'm just young, I might as well kill myself. That's entirely doable, and that's why don't scare a person to a point where they feel that they have no hope. Inform a person. Informing is good. Terrifying people is not. So that part I do not support, Greta, but on other issues I do. I do not support her parents or the people around her because I feel, in my opinion, personal opinion, she's being grossly exploited for what she's becoming the poster person in the world. There was a statement by the great theatrical stage presenter, Sarah Bernhardt, back in the 1800s when she was traveling around doing her one-woman shows, and she said, never be so long in the public eye that you rub it raw. And boy, is it hard to pull out of the public adulation and awards for everything, even though not one of those awards is actually earned. And then one day when the phones stop, and why? Because, well, we've been there, heard that, seen that, there's nothing new, we go on. That's the other side of being 16 when you're not aware of the real world. Every door has been opened, every red carpet thrown out for you to walk on, every things that people work their entire lifetime for with dedication and scholarship and humanity, and you're 16 years old and suddenly you're going to get that award? That's just harmful because, my God, is that going to set this young person up for a fall later? Sooner or later, that'll eclipse. It always does. But you wouldn't know that right now. In any case, I just wanted to share what we could do, we together, by changing some habits seeking the good information to displace bad information, becoming proactive, making positive changes, informing young people who then will motivate older people, and showing that those of us who are baby boomers or senior citizens are fully capable of getting out of our comfort zone and our malaise and our self-absorbed lifestyle and think about maybe spending some time as shepherds of the rest of the planet as well. From Van Andel Research Institute comes a study published in the peer-reviewed journal Immunity that talks about the immune cells and the environment, and the two actually go together. What do I mean? For years, scientists have used cells grown in petri dishes to study the metabolic processes that fuel the immune system. But a new report that I just read in Immunity suggests looking outside of the dish and into living organisms gives a dramatically different view of the way immune cells process and use energy. Past research has shown that specialized immune cells called T cells convert a sugar molecule that you all know is glucose into energy to power cellular function. However, this belief was largely built on data from cells grown in petri dishes, far removed from their normal environment. It's almost akin to observing animal behavior in a zoo versus that same animal in their natural habitat in the wilds. Our immune systems don't operate in a vacuum. They work in concert with a host of other cells and factors, and all that will influence energy used and need. So understanding cellular metabolism is a critical piece of therapeutic development. And that's what they did in this study. They found that the T cells in a living system use glucose as building blocks for replicating DNA and other maintenance tasks, in addition to converting glucose into raw energy. They also discovered the ways T cells process glucose evolves over the course of an immune response, which suggests T cells may use resources differently in the body when fighting a bacterial infection, like listeria, or a disease like cancer. And the findings have far-reaching implications for how scientists study the complex interconnected systems that underpin health and disease. And I'll give you an example of this. Years ago, the year was 1970, and I was doing an experiment, and I had 1,000 mice, and they were just normal mice, and every time you would take a wild rat from outside, they were all over everywhere in New York City, and you brought it in, and no matter what test you gave it, it would exceed by 200 to 300% the rat that was in the lab, even though they were the same age, same weight. Why? Because the rat that was living in nature had to forage, had to be careful, you know, of where it went, what it did. So it developed a super immune system. So when I saw that, and it was interesting because when I brought this up downstairs at a monthly meeting of the 16 different department heads, and I said, I believe that we're missing something with human beings. What's that? I believe that we are creating, in effect, bubbles around our lifestyle. We keep to the same diets. We socialize in the same ways. We have certain sedentary patterns or active patterns. And it has nothing to do with what we would do if we were in a situation that challenged us. And I would later see that that was absolutely correct. And then they dismissed it. They didn't think it was worthwhile. So I had to go over to a Dr. Sugiera at Sloan Kettering, and who I was communicating with. He was the dean of all their research over there. And I threw this idea at him, and he thought it was a very interesting hypothesis. So then I just went out, and every night we would trap, in a humane trap, we would trap rats, bring them in, and then we would put them into an environment where they were not caged. They could run around a given area, pretty good size given area. And we gave them a choice of eating the kind of food they would find outside versus the kind of food that they had eaten in a lab, like rat chow pellets. And it didn't take long for the rats that were brought in, if they started eating their standard diet, they got weaker, they got fat, and they even became cannibalistic. We noticed that. So I let all the rats out, the ones that were in there, all of them out of their little tiny containers. They were running over this 3,000 square feet. I got a bathtub in there and made them a lake. That was kind of fun. For them, it was like a lake. They could go swimming in, and I played very soft music, and I got them no rat pellets ever again. I didn't even give them water. I made fresh juices for them. I gave them a living foods diet. What would they eat if they were in nature? Well, they'd be eating whatever was available, like grass or seeds or nuts. That's what they ate, wheatgrass. So anyhow, they lived 30% longer and were healthier. I didn't see the shedding of the hair. I didn't see the obesity. I didn't see the arthritic pain and the swelling of the joints, the things you normally see. Then I fasted them 2 days a week. They got plenty of juice, but no solid food. They lived even longer. So you see, when you put a person into an environment that challenges them, their immune system will respond to the challenge. There's a whole communication among over 67 different elements within your immune system, all communicating and harmonizing so you can do something. And I've seen it even in myself when I'm racing, when I'm doing the hard races, where I'm going faster than I've ever gone in my life, and I can't do it just based on my training. That's where you have to release a certain chi energy and trust that that energy will communicate with your cells and your muscles will go faster. And indeed, that was actually the case. I did that experiment in a 40K national championship and won overall. All the champions, 130-some champions there, I took first place. On a hot day, 24.8 miles. But then I did that over 100 more times over the next 4 years, winning every single race in America. I'd fly out to Los Angeles one night, get there early in the morning, drive to the place and just in a cab and just sit there until it was race time, race and come right back to New York. I wanted to see how far could I push the human body. But I also was compensating. I was compensating by going into the Tri-State Healing Center every day and seeing what could I do for what I just did, which challenged my immune system, created some oxidative stress, prematurely aged myself, and then that's how I learned how to create counterbalancing input of energy and nutrients so I didn't end up depleting myself and running myself ragged, as most people do. And that's how I've been able to help other people in part. That's what I'm doing right now, even today. Every single person who's in this anti-aging clinical study is over in the gym right now being tested. Exercise physiologists with stopwatches and measuring pulse and blood pressure. And now we're going to see after 2 weeks, we're finishing 2 weeks, how many sit-ups, how many pull-ups, how long can they go on a verse climber? How can they go on a flat and elevated and a stair climber and a treadmill? It'll be all day and all day tomorrow. It takes hours to do this. But I'm willing to bet, based upon how they've been compensating by building up their immune system and exposing themselves to levels of discomfort. Remember, you can't be healthy and be comfortable. That's not possible. And yet we like to be comfortable in all that we do, so as a result we surround ourselves with the things that give us comfort, but that actually weakens us. I'll give you one more example of this. When I heard that there was one scientist, a medical doctor scientist in the world, Dr. Joseph Issels, who had the greatest results in curing terminal cancer, it was 16.6%, and that was proven by a Dr. Audier at Leiden University. And the BBC had done a special on this man called Go Climb the Mountain. Gordon Higginson, the famous writer and journalist for the BBC, did it. And yet a man named Aubrey Singer, who ran the BBC, didn't want to play it because it, well, I believe he would not give me an answer, but a Dr. Robinson, who was a part of the team that went there, of orthodox oncologists in Queen's College of London, and he spent time there, and he looked at the patient records, and he told me, he said, I believe that it's because he's challenging their immune system to grow so it can be stronger to fight the cancer. Well, anyhow, so there I am, and it's a wonderful, beautiful environment. It was at that time. And on Tegernsee Lake, and there they were all up on this little let's say, an elevated area above the lake, and you look out over this beautiful lake. I'm suggesting maybe 200, 300 feet above the lake on this grassy knoll-like area. And they were all quiet. And I didn't notice what he was doing because I had never met the man. The whole place was empty, and one guy putting on his sneakers up on the third floor said, "Oh, I'm a dentist from Chicago, and I'm here because of my cancer, but come on, I'll show you where he's at." They're all up on the mountain. I said, "What mountain?" He said, "Come with me." So we walked up this hill. So I stood in the back. I didn't want to go over and introduce myself because clearly he was busy. So he just said, "Close your eyes and visualize that you're on a horse. Do you want a white horse, a black horse? Do you want a white armor, black armor? But whatever you choose, you're going to have two very powerful swords in each hand. And as you start a slow gallop, you're going into the valley of death. And in front of you are millions of cancer cells. And they're there to kill you. But not on this day will they succeed. Draw your swords. The battle begins." And with that, the overture of 1812 blared out right behind me. Must have knocked me 6 feet. Because I didn't know that the speaker was about to go on at a really high decibel. And here was the overture of 1812 playing, and you could see the people's body movements. You know, I mean, their bodies were moving, and their eyes were closed. And I didn't know he had just taken their blood before that. But immediately after, they took the blood again. This is about 15 minutes. And then I introduced myself, and he said, "Come on, I'll show you something." So we went down to the laboratory. And he said, "This was the killer cell, the natural killer cell." And I said, "Yeah, I know what a killer cell is. And this is what protects you. But you can have natural killer cells, but are not that active. And I want to see, how do I activate the killer cells?" And he said, "I found out by rotating eggs." "What do you mean?" "Well, watch." And he took me into the laboratory, and he would turn eggs upside down every 12 hours. That meant the developing yolk in there, and the life form, had to adapt to that stress of just being turned. And he said, "So in a controlled environment, the more stress you have on an ongoing basis, the stronger the microorganisms become. Therefore, that old adage, what doesn't kill you strengthens you." And he said, "Take a look. This is before and after. Wow. There's a tremendous increase in the activity of the natural killer cells." And that was the first time I'd actually seen an experiment in the body-mind relationship. So what you think has enormous power when it comes to healing, but the reverse is also true. There's an enormous power for diseasing when you get into a depressed, angry, or a mood that is not becoming to your immune system. So this takes us back to this research report. In studying the immune cells, the environment matters. Yeah, the emotional environment matters. The relationship environment matters. The toxic environment or healthy environment you're in matters. Being around trees and shrubs and water and lakes and fountains matters. Being around ghettos matters. And sure enough, you correspond that and you see associations and meta-analysis that those who grew up in poor neighborhoods, who have dangerous streets, a kid won't know and a mother won't know, will the kid get to school without being bullied or harassed or the lunch money stolen? And so that matters, and it's all cumulative, and it'll either strengthen or weaken your immune system. From the Baker Heart and Diabetes Institute and Monash University, which is in Australia, alpha-tocopherol, vitamin E, preserves cardiac function by reducing oxidative stress and inflammation in the ischemia and reperfusion injury. So that's all very important. So if we want to be healthier in our heart, and if you have any kind of heart issue, make sure you're getting your vitamin E. All right, this study definitely shows if you've had any form of heart attack or stroke, you need vitamin E. And also the polysaccharides. There's your aloe vera. All right, polysaccharides, whoa, are they healing? This is from Banabin Nati College of Pharmacy in India. They're potential anti-cancer agents. This is a review of all that. Polysaccharides are in more in some foods than others, but they're really loaded in aloe vera, whole leaf aloe vera. And these are versatile scaffolds with anti-cancer potential. They modulate multiple pathways, leading to reduced cell proliferation, meaning stopping cancer. And in the immune modulation, they can help block cancer, so that's good. Now, a separate study from Jinan University in China, published in the American Journal of Chinese Medicine, showed that polysaccharides, including from herbs, have strong anti-tumor properties. So one more reason, like Panax ginseng is a good example, and ginkgo biloba, and astragalus. Those are examples of polysaccharide-rich medicinal plants, and they can help you both preventing and turning off inflammation that leads to disease, including cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. So that's the latest on health and nutrition from McMaster's University. Green tea extract delivers a molecular punch to disrupt formation of neurotoxic species. In lay language, when you have a cup of green tea, it's benefiting your brain. It detoxifies properties and helps fight Alzheimer's and dementia. So that's the takeaway message on that. I'm Gary Nall. We're 31 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break and come right back. And when we come back, we're going to come back to an 11-second comment. I don't have to introduce the person. I think you will know them. Please stay with us.
Just move on up toward your destination.
So, I mean, that is the land of unconfirmed.
Yes, we came, we saw, he died.
Did it have anything to do with your visit?
No, I'm sure it did.
Yeah, take credit and laugh at a man who died a terrible death. If anyone saw the videos, they filmed killing Gaddafi, the leader of the most important country in Africa, and they used swords and stuck them rectally into him. And it took him a while to die, and she thinks that's funny and takes credit for it. Barack Obama took credit for it. They thought it was a good thing. The United Nations said it was the most important thing they had been able to do. Okay. And yet, after that, Hillary Clinton and the entire administration, when everything went sideways, and after all the gold was taken by the United States and some by Great Britain, and France came in, I believe it was a paramilitary group from France or some of their special units that actually tracked down Gaddafi so they could catch him because Sarkozy wanted resources. Now look back. This is a woman who garnered more or less 66 million votes. Would they have voted for her if they knew, for example, that on foreign and military policies, Hillary Clinton consistently supported bills and executive acts strengthening the military-industrial complex, strengthening the international intelligence agencies, strengthening the international might over social services and human development through George Bush's 8 years in office, the Patriot Act, the surveillance for citizens, increased budgets for war chest, invasions in Afghanistan and Iraq. She supported it all. By murdering Gaddafi, and it was murder, and Barack Obama and her and many others should be held accountable, and rightly so, they should be tried for crimes against humanity, but they won't be. They destroyed Libya. And you say, so what? I'll tell you about Libya in a moment. They also destroyed the momentum for a pan-African economic renaissance, a pan-African currency, an African central bank, And all that was reversed to assure Western corporate colonialism continued. So quite clearly you could say, without any irony, that Barack Obama was one of the most important racists, absolute racist. Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton have always been racist. And I won't even get into when she was her husband was governor, and they used mainly black prisoners without pay to serve her and work in the governor's mansion. It was actually in her book, and it takes a village. Also, her actions gave support to Al-Qaeda and the Syrian Freedom Organizations that resulted in 13.5 million people in dire need of humanitarian aid and the displacement of 4.8 million Syrians as homeless refugees. Just the children alone died, 50,000 in Syria. She backed that. And because of what she did in Libya and then using the embassy with Christopher Stevens, that use was to smuggle all of those weapons that were captured from Gaddafi into Syria to be used by ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and others, a full supporter of this. She backed a coup in Paraguay to remove democratically elected social reformer Fernando Lugo, who supported poor farmer revolution and propped up pro-Washington businessman Cartes, a member of the small 3% elite landowners controlling Paraguay. So she was not a feminist. She allowed females who were poor, including most of the journalists and the unionists and the indigenous spokespersons or women, to be murdered. And we're just talking now about Paraguay. She was bringing in, and by bringing in to a once promising social reform in Honduras under democratically elected President Zelaya, by military coup that she sponsored and the CIA operated, so U.S. companies like United Fruit and Dole could be certain to have bananas at basement prices, and result a Honduran killing field of journalists. Again, another country, she personally and Barack Obama personally were responsible for the deaths of Berta Cáceres and social reformers and farmers and unionists and families and children. Also, Hillary Clinton, because of what she did, assured that the destruction theology of Wahhabism, the most radical and putrid extreme hate group, is strengthened and remains the primary funder of radical Islamic jihadi organizations like ISIS and Al-Qaeda. These are the beheaders. These are the people that take no mercy on anyone. Why? She supported Saudi Arabia and monarchy. And all this comes from Saudi Arabia. She supported Israel's ongoing military genocide of Palestinians, particularly in Gaza, so the apartheid occupation and expansion of Israel's settlements into Palestinian land can continue. Today, the actual Palestinian landmass is a pittance from what it was at the time of the Oslo Accords. Successfully resurrected once thought of as fringe neo-Nazi factions in Eastern Europe by backing a coup in the Ukraine and to bring fascism back into the modern world. This has rebirthed Ukrainian mobs called the Kill All Jew mobs, which horrifies Russians. Well over 2,000 Russians killed so far. As Secretary of State, more weapons exported and sold to foreign nations than any other president, especially to the Gulf states and Africa and for the Eastern Soviet bloc countries. She consistently supported and advocated vetoes of UN resolutions that were critical of Israel's crimes against Palestinians. And during the Arab Spring, she supported fundamentalist pro-Western regression parties and dictatorial sociopaths to take control in the aftermath, like Tunisia, Egypt, Yemen, and Bahrain. She was a harsh enemy of the United Nations, which she saw as an obsolete, non-functioning organization, but it was also an obstacle to her American hegemonic and militaristic agenda, which included her opposition to restricting and banning landmines. Yeah, you heard me right. You know what Lady Diane went out and with a group to find the landmines and to disarm them. Hillary Clinton didn't want anyone touching the landmines and the cluster bombs. No, instead she defended war crimes by the right-wing governments that aligned with herself. She raised tens of millions of dollars in humanitarian aid for Haitians, actually billions, following the 2010 earthquake, so it could be banked by Haitian oligarchs and the Clinton Foundation and its investor cronies. Nothing went down to the filtered down to the people. And right now there's riots in Haiti. People are being shot. Countries, news not covering it. We're not covering the massive uprising all over Iraq, and where people are hungry, they have no jobs, corruption is completely endemic, and not a word. She assured that poor developing nations like the Ukraine and Haiti and Pakistan and Kenya and Nigeria and Uganda and others have unsafe food, and the promise that food security is threatened in their future by promoting and trying to enforce just GMOs and Monsanto's industrial chemical empire. And a Secretary of State, she ordered diplomats to spy on everyone at the UN. Now, her domestic policies, she voted in favor of the Patriot Act, consistently supported surveillance of the public against the law and social media. She demonized Edward Snowden and wanted to see him go to prison, as she did Julian Assange. She's consistently opposed WikiLeaks' release of documents, even though it was WikiLeaks that released documents having nothing to do with the Russians whatsoever, that showed that Hillary Clinton, in over 22,000 emails, was responsible for the takedown of Gaddafi and all these other issues I'm talking about. She introduced the Flag Protection Act, making flag burning illegal and subject to prison time. She lied about her involvement with the Trans-Pacific Partnership. In 2012, she called TPP the gold standard for trade. And yet, that all came out with the leaked documents. Cable shows she had directly told her staff to support it in its foreign affairs activities with other countries. In fact, the National Security Agency advisor, Susan Rice, commended Hillary on her work on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That would have eviscerated all unions in the country. Yet at the same time, when she was running for president, she tried to talk about why she was good for unions. She was an ardent apologist for Walmart employees' policies that have kept millions of families in working poverty. She wrote in her 2003 book, Living History, that CEO Sam Altman, quote, taught me a great deal about corporate integrity and success. Whoa. She received huge donations from big oil and big gas, but when she was no longer electable, all that money dried up. So why were they giving it to the Clinton Foundation? Pay to play? She supports hydrofracking, nuclear. Yeah. All of these toxic. She favors big-time nuclear. And in the email gate, keeping all of her official correspondence as Secretary of State private and ignoring the government-mandated process for such emails. In Chinagate, she had to sell the high-tech secrets in return for donations to Clinton's 1996 campaign. That's just Hillary, remember. But Hillary and Bill do everything as a tag team match. So when you're talking about Hillary Clinton, you got to talk about Bill. Bill Clinton assured that the brutal dictatorships are a viable form of government compatible with democracy around the globe. He sold us that. I guess that's when he put on his dark blue suit, his sunglasses, so he looked like one of the Blues Brothers, got up the saxophone and started to play, and then everybody thought, he's cool. No, he's a genocidalist. This man's seriously disturbed. But if people like it, it doesn't matter how demonic you are. He ignored the international war crimes of Paul Kagame, who's still around today in Rwanda, costing upwards of 2 million lives. That's directly on the Clintons. Mostly Tutsis. Its former nationalist president was killed in a plane crash just before the genocide and the takeover of the government. And the Clintons regarded dictator President Mubarak in Egypt as, quote, this is their words, not mine, close personal friend who received $1.3 billion a year in military aid, untold number of deaths of journalists, social reformers, and intellectuals who opposed Mubarak's regime. By the way, Joe Biden was just beside them on this also. Humanitarian compassion shown to Iraq and economic sanctions responsible for 500,000 children dying. Mind you, Bill and Hillary Clinton caused the death of a minimum of 500,000, more likely 650,000 children in Iraq. But hey, when you're a Democrat and you've learned to lie about everything, so what's 500,000 dead children? No one ever accused on any show, not Rachel Maddow, none of these, you know, people who are sycophants, none of them said any other human being on the planet who caused the death by sanctions of 500,000 children would be in prison for the rest of your life. No, instead, let's run you for president, make you the most powerful person in the world. The day before the impeachment vote, Clinton bombed Iraq. This forestalled the vote further and continued to do while the House was trying to vote. What was his reason to bomb? He claimed because Iraq stopped cooperating with the UNSCOM inspectors. In fact, Iraq's cooperation had been increasing at that time. The Clintons are pathological liars. Clinton had ordered the UNSCOM chief Richard Butler to write a report that Iraq was not cooperating. Plus, the bombing was timed with the Muslim month of Ramadan. Clinton's sanctions of mass destruction killed 500,000 children, and based upon the UNS Humanitarian Affairs Department, the Clintons, quote, humanitarian bombing, yeah, he actually, that's Bill Clinton's words, not mine, we engaged in humanitarian bombing. Let me repeat that. Who but a Clinton could possibly get away, unless you're on MSNBC or CNN or the New York Times, then hey, that's good for us. We don't have a problem with humanitarian bombing of operations Allied forces carried out through NATO, destroying Yugoslavia. 250,000 Kosovo Albanians driven into exile or homeless, massacres and mass graves still being uncovered to this day. 78% of the casualties were non-combatant, just citizens. Our new Cold War with Russia begins with Bill when he reneged on the agreement between Bush and Gorbachev, hence starting a new tensions with NATO and get more NATO countries up against Russia. He conducted bombing in Afghanistan and Sudan. Remember, he bombed a pharmaceutical factory. It had no relationship whatsoever to bin Laden. In 1998, there were unknown casualties, but who cared? They were them. They were black-skinned people. And the Clintons, when did they ever care about the color of your skin before they killed you? Yeah. And Somalia remains a problem area with terrorists, militias, and private warlord groups. The further destruction, destabilization of Somalia carried out with Clinton's U.S. entry and involvement in the Somalia Civil War of 1993. He escalated aid to Colombia, which went to death squads during the war of drugs. And he signed a bill to increase embargoes on Cuba and banning the sale of food, medicine, and clean water. Like Fidel would care. I've been to Cuba. I've had the former head of the KGB and the intelligence drive me around for 10 days with long conversations all day because all I had to do was just look to see things that nobody wanted to show you about what was going on in Cuba. So the people who starved and people who went without were the average Cubans. The military, the leadership, sanctions never touched them. But then there are the dictatorships the Clintons have supported. The House of Saud, the House of Tiny in Qatar, the Alawite dynasty in Morocco, the Idris Deby of Chad, Yoweri of Uganda, Ali Abdullah Sal of Yemen, the Mobutu Siko of the Congo, Zine El Ben Ali of Tunisia, and dictatorial relationships started by Bill Clinton. He was responsible. The Hamad al-Qaddafi in Bahrain, also in Kazakhstan and Tajikistan, these were all on them. The new Democrats essentially turned their back on unions while still pretending to support them. They assured that extreme poverty remains a prominent feature in presidential success story in the American landscape. Bill's so-called 1996 welfare reform bill more than doubled extreme poverty while in office. In fact, I spoke with Professor Francis Fox Piven, and Bill adopted this bill primarily on Hillary's advice and Personal Responsibility and Work Opportunity Act, almost exact from Newt Gingrich's contract with America, that scrapped a lot of aid to families with welfare, and hence a lot of poor people became a lot hungrier and a lot poorer. And in fact, they shifted when they claimed in 1994, we're going to put people first. Yeah, we remember the slogans. But the rhetoric stopped immediately, and it was helping Wall Street and the rich run the country. One study showed that under Clinton, 8 years, the average wage was 2% lower than the average age under Reagan and Bush, and 10% less under Jimmy Carter. So those people actually did more for the average person. The average individual poverty rate was 13.2% of the population under Bill Clinton. Wow. All these policies combined accounted for 42% unemployment among black men when he left office. And on race issues, they're rampant racist. And yet, you're never racist enough to be called a racist when you're part of the corporate Democrats. He launched an American apartheid targeting African Americans through a private prison system where over 50% incarcerated are black and Latino, imprisoning for minor crimes like the possession of small amounts of marijuana. Well, if that's the case and if it were applied equally, Bill Clinton would spend the next 300,000 years in prison with his brother. Yeah, we know all about that. And yet 65% of drug users are white, but only 13% are black. So how is it that 50% are end up in prison for the same crime? That's discrimination. He increased federal capital crimes that warranted prison time, including life sentences. That's on Clinton. In fact, when Bill and Hillary Clinton left their tag team match at the White House, the United States had the highest incarceration rate in the world. And he added 60 additional crimes to the Death Penalty Act. And by the way, Head Start, setting minimum educational standards that has led to the debacle known as standardized testing today, that's Bill and Hillary. In my opinion, two functional illiterates. He improved America's School Act. That's not a good thing, meaning continuing the continuation of the education reform policy that further nationalized one model fit all educational standards, as if every kid coming to school is the same, has the same needs, and all teachers must teach the same. Then he had the Religious Freedom in Schools Act, enabled religious-minded to pray and practice their faith in schools, a bit ambiguous since it opened doors to the right-wing wanting to enforce teaching creationism in school. And let's not forget Wall Street. The fundamental blame for the economic crisis today and the continued erosion of decent jobs falls on Clinton's feet. Glass-Steagall, the World Trade Organization, CAFTA, NAFTA, Future Trading Commodities Act, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TTIP, couldn't happen without Clinton's other gifts to the big banks and mega corporations. The entire GMO threat to the future nation's food supply and the planet, for that matter, was blessed and inaugurated by the Clintons. And they were responsible for institutionalizing Monsanto into Washington and the State Department by hiring Monsanto employees to run governmental agencies. Bill prided himself as the biotech president, including medical biotech, when he started his president's commission on biotechnology. Many perks given to Big Pharma under Clinton. Might also note that this signs real corruption at the CDC and the FDA started to appear mostly under the Clinton watch. And he launched so many childhood immunization programs at the federal level to increase immunization compliance. That's just some. That's maybe 1%. So the next time someone invites a Clinton on the air to talk about why it's their time, they're deserving, why is it that the media are completely anemic and completely without any memory of everything that they did that would represent a crime against humanity and the betrayal of all the trust? Just a thought. Because tomorrow, I'm going to show you what Gaddafi's country was like prior to the invasion. And it's a real education. I'll give you a lot of stuff you didn't know and I haven't spoken about before. Okay. For everyone else, we'll be back here on Monday and we'll be continuing with a very different approach, a uniquely different approach that we believe will cause congressional hearings on Wikipedia. You won't want to miss what we're going to reveal that no one knew. We do, and we're going to share it with you on Monday's show, and our lawyers will be sending this letter to Jimmy Wales and the Board of Directors, every member of Congress, and different federal enforcement agencies. That's Monday. Have a nice weekend, everyone.
People all over the world, goodbye.